Hey everybody, welcome to the 42nd episode of the JDO Show. I am your host, J. David Osborne, and today on the program I have my very good friend, Eli Dorsey. Oh look, I started recording, so guess who just jumped off the bed? It was Kahlua. Say hello to Kahlua. She, whenever I start talking to the computer, I think it freaks her out. She's like, why the fuck is he talking to that fucking weird glowy thing? Anyhow, I started work recently, so I just got off work. I'm really tired, but I gotta bring you that fresh content, motherfucker. So Eli does a lot of special effects work. He worked on American Ultra, The Last Witch Hunter, or is it Witch Finder? It's that Vin Diesel motherfucking thing. He also did, what is the fucking the one with the kids with the weird eyes? And he recently worked on a movie called Nails, which looks pretty cool. Overall, he's a dude from the Midwest. I'm a dude from the Midwest slash South, depending on what part of the Census Bureau you ask. And so we clicked pretty much immediately as soon as I moved to Portland. He's been a good buddy of mine. We talk about movies and other things that are maybe more controversial. I hope you enjoy it. I love you. I love you! Bye. Dude.
Does this sound okay?
Yeah, it sounds totally fine, man.
The microphone's just like this little fucking hole in the corner, so I didn't know what the audio quality was like.
Oh, right on, right on. Did you work today?
Yeah.
When did you get off?
I got off at like 2.
Oh, right on. Is that like an overnight one then?
No, 5:45 in the morning.
Damn, dude. Like, okay, so when you're working at this job, like, do they switch it up on you a lot? Like, are you doing overnight and then 5:45 to 2 and then 2 to 6 and all this kind of crazy shit?
No, I do 2 5:45s, 2, and then I do some 1 to 1:45 to 9:45s in the weekday. I don't have to, like, they're not going to turn your whole world upside down like that or anything.
Right on, right on. That's cool.
So I've had to do that before.
Sure, yeah. So have you watched anything good lately?
Yes, I did. I saw, shit, now I'm drawing a blank now that I'm thinking of the good things I saw. I liked The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Oh, I've been hearing about that stuff, dude. Is that like, it's about a corpse, right?
Yeah.
What was, so who did that one?
Same guy that did Troll Hunter. He has like this Danish name that I could not possibly say if I fucking wanted to.
Does it have like the O with the slash through it? How do you even pronounce that shit? Right on, dude. Right on. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that one. I don't think I've watched a fucking horror movie in forever. I mean, I don't think The Handmaiden definitely wasn't a horror movie.
There's been a lot of underwhelming ones lately, I think.
Train to Busan, I guess, kind of, but that was more of like a thriller, right? Like with zombies. Like it wasn't fucking scary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it had I thought the horror aspects in that were good, but yeah, no, it was, that one kind of reminded me of, like, the way it was paced was really like, kind of like Fury Road is the closest thing I could say. And I guess it's the same as in, it's just moving and they're figuring out problems all the time, and then you're figuring about the characters on the way like that. I love stuff like that, though.
Well, something that I wanted to talk to you about specifically, because you actually introduced me to this kind of concept, was that we were talking about crime film, because you're a big crime film fan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you brought up these movies from the 90s, right? And I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about like these 90s crime films, because I actually think that that was kind of like a golden age. So I guess I'll let you start, just like start naming off some titles, and then we'll kind of go back and forth.
Oh, okay. Like, the stuff that really got me into it was like, I think I could be wrong, but I think a lot of it was like Shooting Gallery, like, you know, Laws of Gravity. That you still need to see that, right?
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen Laws of Gravity.
Ooh, yeah, just like that. Yeah, just the kind of mid late 90s, like ground level crime films, kind of like that, like Ill Town and such, like the Nick Gomez stuff. I really, really liked.
What I like so much about Ill Town too is, and that I think kind of got lost, is that crime films started sort of grounding themselves in reality too much.
which kind of took away some of the charm of especially like Illtown. You know, Illtown has a really like almost Lynchian surrealness to it that I really dig. And then you kind of get into stuff like, well, I mean, it's still like a cartoon, but like when you have Training Day and things like that, it becomes very much more like gritty, on the ground, Snoop Dogg's in a wheelchair kind of shit, you know?
Yeah, that David Ayer stuff, I really don't find his stuff realistic. Like he does way too much at like End of Watch. Like there's things I like about in the David Ayer universe, but I'd say the only movie of his that I could even stand as a movie is Fury. Like there was stuff in Edge of Watch I loved like the way, I mean, I didn't even mind that it was like found footage, and I thought it was cool when they were watching like the guys down in South America with like the night vision goggles, and you're seeing like the heavy duty coke guys, and then when the cocaine cowboys come in and start shooting up everything, and I like that aspect. But like the way he does like that kind of the way everyone's like, hey, bro, just that alpha bro mentality, he just overdoes it so much, like in harsh times and
Oh,
that.
dude, that movie is a classic. It's the exact same movie as Training Day, except Christian Bale is a GI with PTSD. And there's this long kind of part towards the end where the movie just like the pacing fucking stops, and it like he goes to Mexico, I think, and he has like an illegitimate child with a woman down there, and they just kind of like hang out, and his partner's like, oh, well, I guess we're here now. Was that it? I can't remember if that was actually in Mexico or just LA, but there are a lot of Mexicans, so. You know.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't make it all the way even through that fucking movie. I think the first time I checked out in that was when that move they always were really doing in the 2000s, where you'd see like someone sitting there like in their head, obviously really mad, and then they just, you know, smash cut to like them looking directly at the screen and screaming, and then cut back to show, you know, because you can't imagine how bad it is in their head. You have to have that little shitty edit in there, of course. Like that's when I will turn a movie
Which
off whenever.
edit where it's like you talking about shaky cam or what?
No, like where you'll see him sitting there and he's like, oh God, something's going on, and you know, like grabbing his head, and then you'll see that immediate cut that has a shot of him looking directly at the camera screaming, and then he goes, and then it cuts
Oh.
because you know you couldn't possibly just imagine how bad it is from good acting. You've got to have that in there.
Danny Boyle does that a lot.
Does he?
He did it in Filth, I think.
Oh, wait, he didn't do Filth though. That's not him.
Wait, oh, who did Filth?
I don't know.
Somebody who really wanted to be Danny Boyle, I guess.
Yeah, doing an Irvine Welsh novel with that same dude
Right.
from Trance. That's the guy from Trance, right?
Yeah, totally, totally. That's the one where he's with Rosario Dawson. I just remember any movie with Rosario Dawson in it.
She's memorable.
Yeah, very, very much so. Very much so. Okay, so yeah, so Illtown, and then you hate U-Turn, if I remember correctly.
I love the book. I just didn't. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to rewatch it again, but they screw up the whole point of the book. I thought the ending of the book, which is the best part.
Now, would you consider yourself like a horror fan? Like, do you like watching horror shit?
Oh God, yeah. No, that's like my first love. Like that's what got me everything. Like I'm a fucking horror geek. I wade through all that stuff. I mean,
So
now
when did
that
you first like what was your like introduction to that then? How did you kind of get into being a nerd?
I'm trying to think. I know it was through. Did you ever see a movie from the 80s called The Sword and the Sorcerer?
Oh, dude, that sounds so f That's not the animated one, is it?
No, that's Fire and Ice, but it's the same difference, but it's got a guy that has like a sword that somehow shoots blades out like missiles or something. It has
That's
like three
fucking tight.
blades. It has like Richard Lynch is the bad guy, a lot of boobs, and it's like super gory. Like it's the only movie out of that era. You know how they always had those really cool posters and they never delivered it? Like that movie actually
Right.
is the only one that delivers on the poster. But I remember like that was kind of my gateway, because I liked that. And then
Did you read Heavy Metal at all?
oh yeah.
Dude, did you see like the newest fucking issue has that the Savage Sword of Jesus Christ on it? I've got to get a subscription to that shit.
That's the Bisley one, right?
Yeah. Well, no, well, it's Grant Morrison wrote it.
Yeah, dude, that
Yeah.
sounds killer. I like both. No, Heavy Metal was like Heavy Metal and Fangoria were like the first two real magazines that I ever, I got turned on to those like way too young than I should have from one of my parents. And that Fangoria was, I mean, I was into horror movies then, and I remember I found out about Starlog because of Sword and the Sorcerer. And then from Starlog, like, I saw that Fangoria had, you know, Godzilla stuff, because I was really into Godzilla back then too. So then,
oh, right on.
And Fangoria is kind of the only, the way I got into film too, because that was the only one that ever like really explained the behind the scenes, like how everyone did everything, was Fangoria. Like back then, mm-hmm. Other than like making of Thriller video was the only thing I even remember where they're actually showing the behind the scenes, not just in a strictly EPK fashion, but showing you like how they made the makeup and stuff. And that was kind of how I got into
it. Like, what appealed to you about that kind of stuff? Was it like the just the gore? Was it just like, this is fucking rad?
Yeah, I liked the gore a lot. And actually, you know what? I'm doing The Boogans was the movie that really got me into horror, and that was because I couldn't watch it, because I knew it was in I knew it was filmed in Colorado, and we'd been there, and just knowing that it was that close, because I mean, I'd seen other stuff, but it didn't like really bother me, but that one just killed me. And then he wasn't really my cousin, but I called him my cousin Joey. He was watching me, and then my parents left to go out to a movie, and then they fucking tied me to a chair with like jump ropes and like held my eyes open like Clockwork Orange style during the kills, pretty much, with their fingers, like made me watch like all of The Boogans. And did you ever see The Boogans?
No, I didn't see that, but I did recently read a lot of Dennis Cooper, so this whole story is beginning to get me hot and bothered.
Yeah. It has like these things that would like drag, you know, it's a bunch of people, some mineshaft gets like blown open dynamite, and then these like dinosaur monsters like pull people through vents. And then I remember I couldn't even go in and take a shit without like piling up stuff on top of the heating vents, because I thought The Boogans was going to get me. And then
that's fucking awesome.
After that, I just had to kind of like conquer it. And I'd seen horror movies before then, but that was the first time I was ever like visceral. And then after I got over it, I was kind of like, ah, fuck, I want that again. That was kind of a roller coaster, you know, the right. Thinking things were trying to kill me in my own house and being terrified of just banal shit like vents.
I wonder if that has to happen when you're a kid, though. You know what I mean? I wonder if, you know, if you never watch a horror movie, you get to be about, I don't know, 25, something like that. And then you see one. I wonder if that really, because, you know, there are people out there who just, like, it just doesn't work. Like, they go to watch horror movies and they're like, that was fucking terrible, you know? And it just doesn't seem to click. But one common thread, I think, that through everybody I know who's, like, a big horror nut, is that it hit them when they were, like, 8 or 9 or 10, right? Like, they had that one movie. Like, for me, it was Alien. I remember accidentally walking in on my dad watching Alien when I was 5 or 6. And it was right when the fucking chest burster comes out. And I was just like so confused by it. And it just, it's scary as an adult, but as a kid, you're just like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's not how bodies work, you know? And then that's where it kind of stuck with me, I think. But
yeah, I remember the first time I saw something extreme that I wasn't supposed to was The Exorcist. Because, I mean, we always lived in these little shitty two-bedroom houses, and when my parents tried watching something like that, I could get up on my dresser and just kind of peep out through the top of the door and
yeah,
and see whatever was on TV. And yeah, I remember seeing that, and I thought it was funny. I was, because I just saw like the barfing, I didn't really understand like the crucifix, like masturbation, how disturbing it was. I was like, mm-hmm. Her head spin around, I was like, that's awesome.
It's
that's
like, she's doing the Macarena, you know.
But, like, I mean, whatever. Barfing is always funny, and peeing yourself, that's funny. So I didn't understand the horror of that one. Mm-hmm. But and The Shining too, like those, the more the better stuff that I kind of snuck on when it was on HBO, that stuff didn't really affect me. I was just like, ah, this is boring.
Right.
And but yeah, The Boogans was the first one.
But The Boogans fucked your ass up.
And Salem's Lot got me too, like, because I had a friend that died, and he drowned in this pool that I took swimming lessons at the YMCA, and he was like my best friend in first grade, and then he died during swimming lessons.
Holy
there
shit.
I was in the same class as him, but I remember I went to see him like when he was laid out, and his brother told me that he left him a silver dollar in his pocket, and I remember just seeing, you know, just like holy shit, I couldn't really handle it. And then my parents Whoa. Didn't go to his funeral, and I had a dream that he was was at my window knocking and trying to hand me that silver dollar.
Whoa.
And then I saw Salem's Lot, which has the exact same fucking scene with this vampire kid floating in the window and trying to talk to him.
Yeah.
Not handle that shit at all.
That's crazy, man. Like I didn't realize that there was a reason you're so fucked up.
There's lots of reasons.
That's just one of many.
Yeah. No. That was I don't know if that's like a common thing from, because it seems like so specific, you know, to have an image like that. I wonder if that's like a common dream to have when you're that young, and, you know, you see someone, you know, dead.
I used to have dreams that the predator was chasing me, like through all different sorts of environments.
And then did he ever fuck you? And he had a dick with him, just like his face?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, he'd always catch me, and then I'd have to suck each one of his dreads like a dick. It was crazy. It's pretty weird. It's probably why I'm a furry now. But exclusively a predator furry. Like, if anybody dresses up like Predator, I just immediately start to get my antennas go up. Boop.
That's a hard one to pull off, man.
Yeah, dude. It's really complicated, but I'm worth it. That's what I say anyway. But I remember the thing that I saw when I was a kid that scared me the most was I think it was like Unsolved Mysteries or something like that. Like the goofy ass fucking setups that they would do with like the ominous music and shit. I would watch that and I'd be like, whoa, this shit is fucking scary. Like there was one I think with like disembodied floating ghost heads that I remember very specifically. And that one fucked my brain up for years and years and years.
What the fuck is that doing in Unsolved Mysteries? I thought that, you know, that was all just like true crime, where they getting a little more surreal and talking about someone's dream or something.
It was either that, or, you know, it might have been like, and I swear to God, it might have been like Oprah or Ricky Lake or something. And they were doing one of these like just fucking, you know, exposés on haunted stuff. You know what I mean? Like the white lettering at the bottom of the screen is like, my house is haunted and I don't know what to do. But like one of the looking back on it, it would probably make me laugh, but they used this cheap effect to make it seem like there was like a disembodied ghost head floating down a hallway.
Did it look just like Houseu?
It was very, very similar to that. But I think I remember it through my, at the time, maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 year old brain. And it looked fucking real. And I was like, whoa, that's so for years and years, whenever there were dark hallways, I would think about that thing. I'm surprised I can't remember where I saw it originally. Maybe I'm just inventing that memory entirely and I actually really saw that. Who knows?
Man, I would do that with movies that I wanted to see. And you know, we only had like, I didn't have very many places to rent movies. So sometimes there'd be movies I wanted to see, like Kroll. And then I'd read the comic book, and I remember it took like 2 years. I did not get to see Kroll. Like, I didn't get to see it in the theater because my friends were like, fuck that shit. Mm-hmm. And, and they had one copy of The Common Sense down by me, and I think someone just forgot to bring it back. So it took forever. And I read like the comic book. I played the video game. I think I read the novelization, and I put it all together in my head. And then I watched, and it was like so different. And then I remember I watched the movie a couple years later, and somehow I thought I'd already seen it because of all that. I forgot that I hadn't actually seen it, and I was like, whoa, this is way different. Like, I just had it in my head that I'd seen it, and I hadn't, and there were two different things.
Are you working on any projects at all? Like, I guess sometimes I treat this thing like such a conversation sometimes, but I realize, like, with some people that I have on the show, like, they might not be familiar with your work, so you do a lot of like behind the scenes type of shit, so like kind of give a rundown of what it is that you do.
Right now, I mean, I'm always trying to get my own films going, but right now I'm working on special effects on a couple different films. I was my first official VFX supervisor gig on this Irish movie called Nails.
Mm-hmm.
By the same guys that put out the Hallow and Let Us Pray.
I liked Let Us Pray a lot, actually.
Yeah, I like those guys a lot. I'm gonna fantastic films. Those guys, they're just these really cool Irish guys, and they're cool as shit. I'm actually building a monster for them right now, pretty much for free, but just because I like them and I know that there's not much money in short films, and I want to build a monster anyway. So they're, no, I like them a lot. But I did my first like real crazy full supervision job was they did a monster for that movie called Nails, and it was, they ended up without a makeup artist, so like the people that did the beauty makeup had to do this, and that's a hard thing to do. So I kind of came in afterwards and paint, and they did, you know, an admirable job considering, but I had to come in and kind of change what they had on screen to what their concept drawing was, which was a really cool concept, but it didn't work physically with, you know, the schedule they had, and the way it was designed wasn't really, you know, built for, because it was like the thing has like three slashes through its whole face and these kind of teeth floating, and it looks really cool, really cool on 2D, but then when you're trying to make that makeup, it doesn't really work from all the angles and such. So I just had to kind of find a way to, and since they'd already shot it that way and I didn't have any say in how they designed or shot it, I just kind of had to find the midpoint and paint over as minimally as I could, because I really don't like to paint a lot of digital stuff over. But yeah, that was so.
You ever realize that there's almost no monster that works in full lighting? Like, to my mind, the most terrifying monster of all time is the alien from Aliens, probably going back to like being a kid. But like when you see a picture of like that thing and it's just got like a white background and it's fully illuminated, it's kind of dorky looking, you know? It's not like super scary.
Oh yeah, it's just like a bunch of it definitely like that's why they have that thing all lubed up in KY and have kind of like rim lighting on it and stuff, because yeah, if you saw that, or if you see anything, like when you see how these things are built, it's so amazing when you see them up close. Even the best special effects, like anything you've seen, if you get up close to that thing and look at it under fluorescent light and like touch it and see it, how, you know what I mean, it is just like layers of acrylic paint on some foam shit with just some corny ass looking rubber, and it's amazing what, especially back on film, was more forgiving. Nowadays you have to do a lot more with, you know, silicone in the way you paint it if you're not doing CG. like, it's so unforgiving. I mean, have you watched any of the stuff you remember from a kid now on Blu-ray and seen how you can just see every discoloration? Like, you can see where the face is a different color from the appliance, you can see all the edges where it's pasted down, and I
stay away from Blu-ray because, to be honest with you, man, like, I mean, I know it's one of those things, and I hear this over and over, that like you have to get used to it, but I don't like the way people move on Blu-ray.
That's not Blu-ray, that's their TV. That's people that don't turn their smart motion off.
But
it's the same frame rate, man. It's this. There's nothing different in the movement, I'm telling you. Like, and that stuff originates on film, so it's 24p. Mm. It's people that don't turn the true motion on their fucking TV off. And every house I go to that has that, I don't care if they want me to or not, I turn that shit off. It's horrible.
Oh. See, I don't know dog shit about this. This is why I need to have you around to set me straight. But I also, I mean, like, I kind of also don't like, you know, I was going back and I'm rewatching a lot of old Takashi Miike movies. Those things are grainy as fuck. Like, they look, like, really bad, I guess, by, like, today's standards. But I kind of like that shit, man. I kind of wish more people would go back to, like, having movies look like a little trash, you know? I just kind of, I've always liked his aesthetic, though. He could do really cool things with it, but...
It's different every time, but yeah, there was that point kind of like where he was in, I don't know what I would say his glory days, like around like, you know, Visitor Q, Happiness of the Katakuris and stuff like that era, where everything did kind of have that, like, I think a lot of that must have been shot on like Super 16, but it was all kind of grainy and a little bit blue, not quite all the way color balanced.
Right.
But I mean, he can go either way though, because he like Audition is so immaculately. Well, I guess that's different too though, because kind of the more real life stuff with the main character, that some of that did look kind of documentary grainy style, the outdoor stuff. But then when you go into her world in the apartment, I remember that stuff being a lot more stylized and lit more operatically with more color and such.
Yeah, no, that's one of the better looking ones. I think that one and Itchy the Killer are probably the best looking of his movies for the most part.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I was not ready for that movie. Like I knew too, and I was very familiar with him, and that movie is just so crazy.
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorites. I really enjoy it a lot. But it's one of those ones that's like hard to explain to people. It's like there's a crying masturbating rapist with knives in his shoes who's fighting a masochist who's, you know, cut, you know, Glasgow, what do we call those, Glasgow smile into his face. And they fight, and the one guy really, really loves pain, and the other guy really, really loves to cause pain. And I'm not a weirdo, I promise. There's a part where a Yakuza gets hung by fish hooks and fucking boiling water is poured on his back. That part is pretty cool. You know, it's hard to explain to people, you know?
Yeah, I always got... I used to be really terrible about that, that I had no filter of what I'd show, like, girlfriends and... friends. It's like, hey, people that don't know me enough to know, you know, that... some of, you know, my tastes, or that doesn't necessarily reflect on who I am if I watch weirdo Japanese shit and just check this movie out.
Right, yeah.
Don't you?
Well, it's like we went to L with your wife, and we were like, oh man, this one's gonna be kind of rough. And she was like, god damn it, like.
It was her idea too, and I told her, I was like, you know what it's about? She's like, no, I don't want to. I want to go and drive. But I thought she at least knew like the log line. That she's like, oh great, another rape movie.
Right. Yeah, no, she seemed really in the. But no, I mean, I've been thinking about that movie a lot lately, and I mean, I still have a lot of problems with the ending of it. But overall, I feel like I really enjoyed the experience of watching it. Like it's a really good movie.
Acting, like her performance in that, yeah, that was.
But it fell apart. It fell apart at the end, though. Like it did fall apart.
The structurally, like that end was just kind of a thunk. It was one of those things where, you know, I don't expect everything to be that. Oh, she's gotta find a way to find it within herself to turn it around or whatever. I don't expect that, but it just everything just kind of like, you know, thudded down the stairs at the end into a place where it needed to be, but none of it really was very satisfying. Right. Except the no spoilers, but yeah, that one little dialogue moment that you wrote about.
Yeah,
like, oh man, that was like the most, I don't know, just that one line of dialogue is just so Verhoeven that
it's perfect. Yeah, no, it's great. And it's like the movie is worth it for moments like that, and like several other ones, like where she makes that guy show her his dick, and which also you pointed out didn't make any sense at all, but it doesn't matter because like the scene was fun, you know. And then the whole thing, and the weirdest thing about that movie is that all the men in that movie are fucking like incompetent babies, which is a really interesting kind of juxtaposition. But I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, you are right. She was kind of the only person. It seems like not even just the men, but almost everybody else in that film was just. I mean, she was only the real like driving person in that, I would say.
Oh, since we're on Skype, dude, and there's you don't have a picture. It's just a circle with your initials, and I just realized your initials are ED.
Yeah. Ed.
We're erectile dysfunction, Mr. Eli. Oh,
damn.
Yeah, dude. Got that limp noodle.
I do.
Yeah, it's okay, though. We've all got limp noodles every once in a while.
All the time.
Yeah. I used to, dude, the worst thing about losing a boner, especially when you're doing it, is there's almost no way to get it back. You know what I mean? Because the embarrassment comes in and it just compounds everything.
I wouldn't know, dude. I'm just like rock hard all the time. No chemicals. Just alpha dog. I really wouldn't know anything about that. Just
Eli Dorsey fucks.
Totally, man.
Well, you got kids, so you've had to at least twice.
Yeah, I've at least had sex three times. I have three kids.
Oh, that's right. You have three. I'm sorry, man. I always forget.
Well, cause... one of them might be someone else's, so, like, at least.
No, all your kids are definitely yours.
Yeah. Well, I think Ren looks just like Ren. Ren looks just like Jessica. It looks like Jessica's mom is like one of those Russian nesting dolls, and then just opened up and she came out, and then just did the same. Bloop. And Ren came out. They all act very much alike too.
Yeah, yeah. But so how has being a dad? Well, I guess you've been a dad for a fucking long time now. What is it, like 9 years, 8 years, 9 years, something.
11 years.
11 years. Holy cow. Yeah. Jesus, wow! So you've been a dad for 11 years and you're still you.
Yes, I still have not grown as a person.
No, I'm just playing. But no, man. I mean, you seem to enjoy it. You're a good dad. I've seen you around your kids. You can try to fucking play around and shit, but you're a good dad.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I don't know how you could not like. I understand it's probably a character flaw or, you know, even chemical brain flaw of people, how people, you know, don't give a shit about their kids. I mean, I don't understand how it's even just biologically possible.
So, could you repeat that last part? Sorry.
Oh, I was just saying how I don't understand how, you know, those people that have kids and just don't seem to give a shit. Like, I don't even see how that's, like, biologically possible without, you know...
Did something click, like when the kids are born, does like something automatically happen, or are you just like kind of like fucked up on adrenaline?
I think beforehand you're like, oh shit, I'm gonna have a kid. But yeah, I mean, not to have that corny moment, but yeah, like when I first saw this little big-headed baby that looked just like me looking at me, I was like, holy fuck. It was a real psychedelic experience.
Wow.
Like with the sleep deprivation and looking at a little me, like, yeah,
that's my crazy, man.
My first daughter too was, she wasn't quite showing, but they told us she was a boy. Like they're like, oh, it's not guaranteed if that's a boy. had him named and everything, and then I was like, you know, I was just really tired when it all happened. I was like, whoa, that's not a boy.
There's something missing.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a slam dunk, but it was that whole experience was not that I cared, but it was that first one was just like the whole experience just really was.
And when you say sleep deprived, was it just because it was a long labor or what?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's crazy. That sucks. I talked to Violet Lavoie. Talked about this on an earlier podcast, but she was in labor for fucking days, and I was just like, holy shit. That's got to be insane. Like, I can't imagine.
The first Roman, or not Roman, sorry. My first kid, Roman, sorry, me and Jess's first kid, Ren, my second kid, Jess was no drugs and in labor forever until we had to go get a C-section. Just no drugs. And
oof.
And Jess is intense and she does not like pain. Right? And she was, I cannot believe, she was just there like meditating and just completely, I can't believe she did that.
Did she practice that shit? Was she like, did she take classes or something? Or,
yeah, she did. I think she did take some, we took some classes together.
Okay.
And then I think she's always just super organized and prepared. So I think she did some extra stuff, but yeah, no, she was just so zen and I couldn't fucking believe it. Cause she's like that person that, you know, she'll stub her toe walking around the corner and then just immediately just like freak out and like want to hit me like it's my fault. she transfers energy.
Right, right, right. That's a very nice way of putting that. She transfers energy.
I love you, baby. Just in case she listens to
this. But yeah, man, that's crazy. I couldn't imagine. And you know, you hear that corny like cliche all the time, like, well, you're never fully ready. But I just, man, I just couldn't.
You're not.
I just couldn't imagine, though, dude. I just couldn't. I don't know what I would do. I guess you kind of. Okay, so did it, like, see, for you, I feel like it probably snapped into place because, I mean, you still have a family. You know, you're not out on your own, right? You didn't, like, abandon the children. So no. I guess, like, did things at least, like, kind of fall into place, or was it the whole time you were just terrified?
Oh shit, I'm still terrified. Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, you get into the, I don't know. You get into the kind of the sheepdog mentality of, you get used to realizing that you don't have time and you have to, you know, figure out how to corral these things and keep them alive at the very least while
Right.
you're trying to still do whatever you're doing if you're home. And so, like, that was, I mean, to be honest, when I first had Michaela, I was still pretty selfish and just. My girlfriend at the time, she was usually the one that stayed home, and I usually worked. But when I had the kid, I was still kind of like selfish about times, like, oh God, like, not ever, you know, mad, I always, or bad about it, but I was always just like completely lamenting about, damn, I didn't want to smoke weed and play Xbox. Feeling, even, you know, I didn't let it mess with how I took care of her or anything, but I was always in the back of my head like, oh, this sucks, nothing's ever mine. Oh,
right.
And now, you know, now by my third kid, I'm just like, yeah, no shit, this is how it is. And, you know, it's you kind of despite just humbling you, it lets you realize you just have nothing is your fucking time unless you steal it and run away with it, you know?
Yeah, no, it makes me think about my dad. And I remember there was one of my clear memories was that I had something cool had happened in school, and I came home to tell him about it. And I was telling him, and he was sitting there reading some, like, a fucking Robert Jordan book or something fucking retarded like that. And he was like, and I was like, Dad, something cool happened in school. And he was like, And I was like, Dad, check this. And he looked at me, I'll never forget. He's like, I just read the same fucking line 3 times in a row. Can you please leave me alone? And I was just like, damn, dude. And I think that's why I hate Robert Jordan now. It might be. That or he's a terrible writer. One of the
those
two.
I've never even read one, but those covers guarantee I'll never read one. I'm not ever going to read a fucking, whatever those, Anne McCaffrey or whatever. Like, I'm one of those people, I mean, I like some bad fantasy artwork. Like, well, I guess Boris Vallejo is not bad, but if just like that corny ass looking, like, Last Unicorn style artwork on a book cover, I wouldn't read it. Like, you better have a dragon or some big buff dude with a, you know,
the big buff dudes are always like looking
around his leg. Like, it's like, I couldn't get into like the more, or yeah, you can't have a character named like Acorna. Fuck that.
Right. Right. I read Eye of the World and The Great Hunt, and they're actually not bad. They're kind of page.
Those Robert Jordan?
Yeah, those they're the first two. They're kind of page turny or whatever, but then I looked at 8 books and I was like, no, I'm not doing that. That's crazy. That's insane. I'm never going to read these. And yeah, like fantasy in general, like, there's a lot of good stuff out there, but I mean, of course, there's also a lot of bad stuff, and the bad stuff is so very bad, you know. And it's just like, I don't understand the thing that I don't get that much about fantasy. Like, I started reading The Steel Remains, actually, that you gave to me, and that's pretty fucking cool.
That series is so good. It pays off all the way too. Like, you won't believe where it goes.
And the and Joe Abercrombie, and, you know, even to a certain extent, like, George R. R. Martin and stuff like that. Like, they're trying to do different things, but I mean, fantasy is the same thing as bad fantasy is the same as bad sci-fi, and it's the same as bad crime and bad horror, and it's just all these people who just want to parrot the things that they've seen to begin with, right? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I mean, like, a lot of fantasy is like, you know, the tale of the dragon lore or some shit like that. It's like, there was a young peasant boy, and then he found a flute in a river, and when he played the flute, Garl Black, the black dragon of the Black Mountain, came down and gifted him with special powers. All he had to do was suck the dragon's tongue. The dragon's tongue slid out from between its lips. Very slow. Anyway, and then, you know, it goes on.
Still, he was filled with white magic venom.
The white magic venom came from the dragon's tongue into our young hero's lips. And he
did I ever tell you my Eragon story?
Oh, Eragon is, I'm looking forward to your story, but for anybody who doesn't know, Eragon is a book that was written by, I believe, a 15-year-old boy. Got a big
I think he was 18.
No, dude, he was younger. He was like, because that's what made the story so unique, was that he was like crazy young when he wrote that book. Like,
okay.
It had to have been 15 or 16 or something.
Yeah, and it was just like, it's like a complete Star Wars ripoff. But I went to school in Bozeman, which is right by, he lived in, oh man, trying to remember the name. He lived about 25 miles away, but at the Hastings I would go to, like, you'd see these little flyers of just this little dorky fucker, like, in these magic pantaloons, just with, like, a wizard hat, and he was, you know, he was just, like, putting up flyers for that Eragon everywhere, all over the place, and I remember seeing him, too, like, he had him in the bathroom at Hastings, and just, I remember we'd see him, just like, oh, God, God help this poor little guy, you know, like, right. I didn't, you know, not like trying to ridicule him, but I mean, they were just like the
no, artwork. Fuck that kid. Fuck him. Like, fuck him and Eragon.
But I remember feeling so bad for him, and I was going to, for my senior documentary project, we were going to try to get him and do it on him, but then I got too lazy. I was like, shit, I don't want to drive 30 miles or even try to find out how to get a hold of him. So we just did it on, like, my friend's little brother who played D&D or some shit. And then that summer, I remember seeing it, and it was Carl Hiaasen talked, and Carl Hiaasen's like was one of my favorite authors. Like, he's my parents always had those books around, and I read them, and they're fucking amazing. It looks like it would be some bullshit, like, novelty crime or something, because they're all like Florida, and it's all like skin tight tourist trap shit like that. But dude, he's like amazing.
Do you know that he was just at the Portland and Beaverton, the Cedar Hills Pals?
No, but I got my parents' his new book for Christmas. But he's the one that found him. He was down here, like, fly fishing, and he found that fucking book that kid's parents, like, they self-published it back when it cost like $30,000, and they didn't even have the money to do that. And I mean, that thing looked like such a piece of shit, everything. And they had that, you know, just that faith, and they really shouldn't have. Like, this isn't one of those cases, not to shit talk the guy, God bless, like he cares. He's on a fucking mountain of money. Yeah. And then Carl Hiaasen found a copy at some little bookshop down by where he was fly fishing. And then, you know, the rest is history. The dude is just made of cash now. But it's kind of funny, though. Like, and I love that story. The fiction sucks, but I just wonder if it was like Carl Hiaasen actually gave a fuck about the book, or he just, you know, read the back and heard from the bookstore owner about how this family, you know, homeschooled and stuff. I mean, it's like that I remember just like I feeling so bad for that kid when I saw that, and then just seeing, like, holy shit, man, jumping out the window with that best possible scenario for that talent, like, because
right.
That stuff, I mean, I read a good chunk of it when I worked at Borders, and it was god awful.
Yeah, no, it's not good. But, you know, I mean, the one thing that I've learned is that taste is subjective, Eli. There is no objective taste.
Behind it's the real story, though, you know? Like, I wonder if he's, oh, my God, Oprah, people on Oprah are going to fucking eat this up, hearing about how I found this, you know, kid, and their family bet the farm on it, on his little Star Wars Lord of the Ring fanfic slash fic bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really weird, it does seem to have to, you do kind of have to hit the lottery like that and really kind of go all in. Because, I mean, most of the biggest, like, intellectual properties of the past, like, 5-10 years have been, like, fan fiction, basically, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it just seems like the people who are willing to be like, you know what, I got, like you said, like, $30,000-$40,000, it's like, I'm just putting it all into this, we'll see what happens, whatever. But it seems like sometimes it works. I mean, I would really like, I would like to get on this show somebody who bet their entire, like, livelihood on their book career, and it totally tanked. I would want to talk to that person.
I asked my parents to bet their livelihood on me. Like, I couldn't even, if my parents were like, okay, son, we're going to get a second mortgage on our house, you follow, you're like, fuck that, don't. I'm too late. I couldn't even let my parents do that. Well, now, so if I was like 20, I'd be like, right on, you guys will see this back really soon.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Thank you.
Right. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that's what it takes at a certain point. You know, you just have to, you know, us plebes have to have somebody come down from on high and, you know, knight us with their, you know, Eragon sword. Was it was that was Eragon the dragon? Did he really just name a dragon? Like he just made it with an E, like he's like the next letter over in the
You
alphabet.
ragging?
You ragging? Why you ragging on Eragon? Like, yeah.
Holy shit, I didn't even notice that. I mean,
Yeah. But no,
you should have gone this the second one should have been called Fraggin'.
and then Greg and then
Dragon.
Gragon and then Hragon.
Dragon and Fraggin' are way cooler than Eragon.
That's true. Yeah, Eragon reminds me of the Egon from the Ghostbusters. Which
Yeah.
do you see the new Ghostbusters?
I did.
You like it?
I did. I mean, it's you know what? I think I thought it was fun. It was whatever. There were a couple parts I really laughed at. It was kind of in one ear out the other. None of it stuck or anything, but I thought it was genuinely fun, and I liked it. You know, about one thing I have to say, at least it's about smart people. The one thing I did not like is the part that everyone else raved about, though, is Kate McKinnon's character. Hated that character. There was nothing to her. She was just there to be like doing like 90s dances in the corner and being fucking wacky. I think she's a good actress. She's very charismatic. She's very talented. But like her character was just the whoa, wacky. And then they throw in some shit like, oh, you guys are my first family to add like a little bit of depth to her or something. But I hated her character so much. Like all the other characters had kind of something to them.
Right. Now, what was the last movie you watched that you really loved and the last movie you watched that you really hated?
Last movie I watched that I really loved was, good God. I liked In a Valley of Violence enough. Wasn't too the moon with it. Last movie I really loved. I don't know. It's been a bunch of meh. I did not particularly like the just saw it. Marky Mark's newest in his I'm Every American Hero Ever trilogy.
Oh, is it the Deepwater Horizon?
No, the other one, the Boston bombing one. I
Wait,
kind of like,
there's a Boston bombing one?
yeah, with Marky Mark as a character. It's Jesus, what is the name of it? Patriots Day.
No way. I didn't even know that that was a
Same
thing.
director as Deepwater Horizon and I don't know, the Marine one.
I don't keep I don't know why you watch these movies.
I don't know. I watch a lot, but I don't know. I like procedurals, especially stuff with like terrorism, and I think Peter Berg technically makes decent to watch. I liked Deepwater Horizon, surprisingly. I didn't think I would, but he plays like a fictional composite. Like he's supposed to be like, you know, he's a Boston dude who's like trying to do, but he plays like the most worthless fictional composite of characters because he doesn't really do anything. He's just kind of like in the shit everywhere. Like he's a composite of all these different policemen that did work that found him, but he'll just kind of show up, and then there's a part where, you know, the FBI is there and they've already composited all, like, made this whole warehouse grid of where all the businesses are, and they have all their camera footage, and they're like, oh, we need a good old boy to think in his brain where this guy was in these stores at this point, because they find one of them. They're like, okay, he was in front of the fucking kitchen caboodle at 4:45. Where is he next? I mean, they would already have that gridded out, and they're like, oh, we need a good old Boston boy to tell us. He's like, all right, if he's at kitchen caboodle, and he's like thinking in his mind, oh, he's going to be in front of the Adidas store at 4:44. And then they're like, all right, bring up that camera. Like they wouldn't already have that all out. And he's just kind of just, but they don't ever have him being like, okay, I'm the guy that ran over this one of them, or actually caught the other one. He's just like kind of there like, all right, taking names, and just kind of his nose is in the shit all the time. But they're not really making him one of the real characters that did
You know,
anything. It's
honestly, I mean,
so
like,
weird.
it makes sense to me to make movies about 9/11, but the Boston bombing seems like pretty thin material.
No,
Like,
I guess the whole movie as built as a thriller isn't bad, because I mean that's it's you know against time, you know, it was like what, 24, there's like almost like 40 hour like manhunt, and there's actually like good action notes, but it's just kind of how they put his character in there and just how hard he's really trying to be the everyman real life American hero and three Peter Berg movies particularly.
They all came out really close together, didn't they?
Yeah.
Jesus, that's crazy. Like, he's just cranking them out. It's a little Patriot factory.
Oh, man, he is... Yeah, I'm waiting for his name. I bet he was so mad he didn't get an American Sniper. I guarantee he wanted that one.
Now, so that was the one that you hated?
It's going to be Marky Mark. Well, so I'm going to bury this script. It's going to get fucking blacklisted.
No. So that was the one that you hated the most? Patriots Day?
I hated him the most in it, I think, just because I could see how hard he was trying to... I don't know. I think it's kind of sick how he's trying to insert himself in all these real... It seems like he's really bent on making himself look like a hero.
He should make a movie where he beats a gay Asian dude to death. Because that would be...
Mark story?
Yeah, that would be like really meta.
Lifetime to make that, and it'll be better than anything he's ever made, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he should just do it and just see what people say. Like, be like, yeah, this is me. This is who I am as a person. Because I mean, it's bizarre to me, like what gets swept under the rug, like that nobody really cares about, but then other things that people really do. Like everybody knew that about him, but it's just like everybody's like, yeah, I don't know.
Whatever. That guy was gay?
No, I just wanted it to be gay so that it could be extra, like, offensive that he beat him, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because that would make more sense, right? I mean, that'd be like the double whammy of Boston racist homophobes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, it's kind of crazy to me. It kind of colored my whole enjoyment of it, and it's so weird, man, because, you know, like, people go back and forth on that kind of thing all the time where they say, oh, you know, whoever made the film doesn't matter to me. It's all about the art. But then... Everybody has their particular buttons, and there's no rhyme or reason to what it's. I think it's all a sliding scale of how much you like the piece of art and how badly you judge the particular crime.
Right? Yeah, like Roman Polanski. I'll still watch Roman Polanski.
Oh, for sure. Me too. Yeah, no doubt.
I just don't like the way he, you know, like I know whatever happened when he was younger, and yeah, oh shit, that's horrible. And but that's not why, you know, like I don't know if the reason I want to damn him is just how hardcore he's just that image he's trying to put out, and so how hard he's going after it, you know, like if he wants to be such a patriot for his town and make a movie that really respects those people, why is he making himself a fictional goddamn character doing all the stuff that real people did?
And
when the most heroic thing he's ever really done is a hate crime against an Asian man, you know, like I think it's just kind of fucking demented.
Right. Oh, you switched gears back to Marky Mark. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, all right. I thought you were still talking about Roman Polanski. And when you said like when the most, you know, impressive thing he did, I was going to be like, you know, was survive the Holocaust.
Yeah. The most impressive thing he did was survive the genocide.
Yeah, no, but yeah, no, it gets to be a, like, really weird, sketchy territory. Probably an argument that's best just not had by anybody, you know? I don't know. I don't know. I think I've just gotten worn out by stuff like that recently, but yeah.
Well, it comes up everywhere, too. Like, you know, now, I mean, it comes up around award season more than any other thing, like the Casey Affleck being super weird and creepy.
Mm-hmm. Whoa, curveball on that one.
You didn't hear about that?
No, I did. I'm just saying that's not surprising.
I really like Casey Affleck. Well, I mean, it's...
But he looks creepy. He looks like the kind of guy who'd do exactly that thing.
He paid out yeah, he does.
Like, I mean, that's why he was the guy who jacks off into the baseball glove in Good Will Hunting. Because he looks like the kind of guy who would beat off into a baseball glove.
Yeah, I think Morgan Freeman's one of those people, too. I just can't prove it.
He's a baseball glove beater?
Or, well, I mean, there is the rumors that he allegedly married his, essentially his ward, like the child that him and his wife adopted. But
that makes the ending to Gone Baby Gone really different.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's like one, I mean, Morgan Freeman, it's all, that's like, you know, some, U.S. Weekly speculation type shit there, maybe
you're
even worse.
You're not going to take my wife from me.
But Casey Affleck's thing, he actually settled out of court for, so.
Right, which means pretty much that, like, you know, you did right it, but whatever.
Funny, huh?
Yeah, he wanted to get them
even
statues.
If he didn't do it, he'd probably, his handlers would have done that for him right now, because he's got all that, like, fuck, just bury this fuck. I don't care if you fucking did it, pay them off.
And yeah, because it fucking ruined, what's the Birth of a Nation guy's name? What was his name? I can't remember.
Was it Nate Turner? And the character's name was Nat Turner?
No, it was Nat Turner and Nate Parker.
Nate Parker, yeah.
That's what it was.
It was like, it seemed very close to Nat Turner.
But yeah, that totally tanked his thing.
It's essentially the same thing. I bet Casey Affleck slides a little more.
Because he's not black.
Grass cracker.
Yeah. Man, that's a sad state of affairs, man. I mean, the whole thing is fucked up, but it's really weird. Like, we all have our blind spots. And, yeah, Casey Affleck is the nation's blind spot. You know, he's just so wacky and he's so quirky.
Yeah, I think the stuff with that Nate Parker is kind of fascinating, too, because, like, I mean, who knows what really happened, but I mean, he was exonerated in court. And I think a lot of the coverage too that I noticed from kind of the more right wing stuff is like, yeah, look, he's claiming he's the victim because he's not going to apologize. That says, hey, yo, I'm sorry for her, but I did not fucking do that. I did not do that. And they're like, look at him. Now he's the victim after his sexual assault victim killed himself. Like, there were, and I mean, I think he got a lot of shit because he didn't, you know, he for just expressing his innocence that the kind of court had expressed too, like,
right. No, and that is where it gets really weird too. It's like, well,
I mean, that's slippery, y'all. I mean, you can't. I mean, no one can. You can't. I don't know. It's so. I feel so weird and talking about my opinions about, you know, sexual assault cases that I'm involved in no way on. Like, I could even know what's going on, especially when I'm.
You got your own garden to tend, my friend.
I know, dude. I know. Tell me about it.
No, I get you, man. I lost that a long time ago. It's called having shame, and it's good that you have it, but I don't. So I just roll with it, man. I just plug forward.
Yeah, why don't you white-splain it to all of your
Yeah, I'm going to white-mansplain it. I'm going to mansplain the shit out of everything. But on that note, sir, we need to do this again. We need to do a podcast where – I was thinking about what you said. We need to do a podcast where we actually, like, review movies. We could do short little capsule reviews and just be
– Yeah, no, I really want to – I want to do, like, serious, it'd be fun to just do crime movies.
Yeah, it would be cool to, like, make a list and, like, watch them and then just talk
New
it
Jack
out.
City, episode number one.
Dude, that's a really, really good idea, and we need to do that. But right now, I need to make some spaghetti. So, sir, thank you for being on my podcast. And I guess anybody who's listening, you can look forward to maybe an offshoot. I'll probably just put it under the JDO show, at least at first. But a kind of offshoot where we talk about crime movies, which will be fun because Eli actually knows things about movies.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bud. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
Yep, you too. Bye.